Welcome to Intentional Living with your host, Dr. Randy Carlson. He's a conference speaker and coach and your advocate for the family. Dr. Randy has said a few times over the years that if you showed him your checkbook, he'd be able to tell you what your priorities are. He'd also be able to tell you if you were intentional with your finances. So how are you doing? Joining Dr. Randy today is our intentional financial coach, Parky Thompson, and they want to talk to you about intentional finances. Here's our number, 1-888-888-1717. Now, to help you be intentional with your finances, here's Randy.
Thank you, Kurt, and I think that's pretty true. You know, you look at a financial register, it could be your checkbook, or if you're using credit cards, looking at how you use your credit cards, let's face it, you're going to spend more than you would if you were just on cash, but it pretty well tells our priorities. When you look at the end of the year, a lot of banks will print out a little report on how much was entertainment and how much was food and how much was gasoline and all that kind of thing. And you see look at that. Look at this, you know. It pretty well gives an indication of where your priorities are. What does that matter? Well, we're talking about resources, and we know that the Scripture teaches where your treasures are. You can finish that sentence, can't you? That's where your heart's going to be as well. So we're talking about what matters. A big deal. We see it impacting marriage satisfaction, marital communication, the next generation, if kids are not raised and learning how to handle money. It's a big deal. You've felt it and you've lived it. We got some callers ready to go as we're talking today with Parky Thompson. As Kurt mentioned, he's a contributor here to the Intentional Living Center. He's a certified financial counselor, passionately and compassionately helping his clients navigate the challenges of financial life today. And he himself was one that had to dig out of a hole and rebuild his financial picture, and now making that a ministry to help others. And Parky's on the line today with us. Parky, welcome back to the Intentional Living Center.
Well, thank you for having me back.
Appreciate it. You know, we talk about money. And by the way, just before we jump into the calls, here it is. You know, we're just a few days away from taxes. Do you have any thoughts on that? I mean, with the new tax laws and things, what are some things people should be looking at as they're bringing all their finances together for the taxes if they haven't already done so?
Well, hopefully they've got those underway and hopefully complete. I think we get a couple extra days this year to actually file, but hopefully you've got that done and you know whether you're going to get a refund or whether you're going to owe. And pretty much last year is water under the bridge. But what I would encourage people to do is look forward. We've had some new tax laws that have come into place as of January the 1st. And in most cases, with most people across the country, they're going to pay less in taxes. And so for those people who are W-2 employees, they have taxes withholding their paychecks, I would encourage them to use the tools that the IRS offers that just came online the 1st of March. Use that tool. Take that information that you have with regard to your finances and, you know, kind of forecast what you're doing there. Make the changes to your W-4 so you can get more of that money in on a monthly basis, or make sure that you're set up to pay for what you're actually going to owe, and then have that money available so you can live by a plan each month.
What does a person do? They're going to get a refund. Let's say they got a, you know, sizable refund, they overpaid, and they're trying to think, what am I going to do with that money? Where would you start with that question?
Well, the first thing that I would do is I would make sure, as I talk to people about building their financial house and working from the ground up, I want to make sure that people have an emergency fund. Most of the reason why people initially start to go into debt is because an emergency happens, and they'll use those credit cards to take care of that emergency, and it grows into a way of life. You know, avoid that. Put yourself out there. Make sure that you've got an emergency fund. Start with $1,000 to $2,000. Have that in there. And then take that leftover. And again, you've got to make sure that you're living on a plan monthly as you're going through this. But take as much of that you can and start paying off that debt that you've accumulated. Start paying off. Start with that smallest one. Get a huge victory there and pay that thing off as soon as you can. And hopefully you can do it with your refund. Knock that first one or two out. And again, work on that and making sure that you're paying off each debt as fast as you can, aggressively, putting some other things on the side. Maybe even taking a vacation this year, doing some of those other things that we wanted to do because we want to get out of debt. As we slowly progress, it'll start to turn quicker as we begin to pay off this debt, and we can have a fully funded emergency fund. We can really get into taking advantage of retirement planning, maybe get into paying some money or setting aside some money for our kids' education, maybe paying off the house. That may be something that's totally elusive to people. They may be thinking about it in their lives. It's one of those things that you can do when you live intentional.
That's right. That's intentional living. Well, I'll tell you what, we've opened the doors and a floodgate. A lot of people are coming on in with questions for you, Parky. So let's get started here. Keith is on the line in Tennessee with an important one. Keith, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
My question is about enabling versus helping your parents. as far as with their finances. If they're not spending appropriately and expect you to help them.
So do you see them making dumb decisions with money?
Yes. They live in a resort area, so they have a very expensive house, but they can't afford it. They can't work, and they're doing reverse mortgage. So they have quite a bit of equity in the house. Yeah. They could sell it and pay cash for a smaller house, but they just don't want to leave the area. And the taxes are $10,000 a year, and they expect us and the siblings to help pay for those taxes so they can stay in that house.
So how old are your parents?
Well, they had a he's disabled, so he can't work. He's only it's actually my in-laws. I think they're like 60.
So they're 60, basically don't have any savings then?
No.
No savings, can't pay the taxes, reverse mortgage. Okay, Parky, I see where this is headed. How would you help Keith? I mean, he wants to be a loving son-in-law, but at the same time, writing checks for $10,000 to cover taxes is not the answer.
Yeah, you can't do that. I think the first thing that I picked up, Keith, there is you and your wife need to be on the same page with this. Okay?
Oh, we are.
You don't want to cause any problems there. But the truth is, I would expect when your in-laws were raising your now wife when she was a girl, they had to show some tough love. They didn't let her go out and play in the middle of the street. They didn't let her play with electric sockets and that type of thing. And quite frankly, they taught her, and they used that word no quite a bit. When your parents are in a situation, I'm going to call them your parents even though they're your in-laws, but when they're in that type of situation, somebody's got to be the adult in the room, and somebody's got to lay this out. Now, it doesn't mean they're going to accept your advice, your direction, but you can't put your family at risk of the financial needs that you have to make sure that you're taking care of someone else's situation they brought themselves to be in. I mean, clearly they have a way out based upon the information that you've said. They can sell that. They can buy something less expensive, pay less in taxes, a lot of different things that you've got going on there. And I think they need that wise counsel from you and the siblings to do that. But at the same time, you guys have got to be in a position to say no. That's typically when people are going to feel pain, is when things don't work out the way they want them to, and they've got to do something different. It doesn't go their way. By making them do something else and sticking to your guns, you'll see some changes there. At the same time, you use that word help versus enabling. I think if you were to go in and take care, in this case, of the taxes or maybe even a house payment or something like that they may need to help them get ahead, I don't think that's wise in doing that. However, it's a situation where they do have to have food. If they, some medical, they don't have money to go to the doctor when they need to go to the doctor, and you've got a one-off opportunity to be able to help there, that's one thing. But enabling and doing some of that thing, I would encourage you not to do that. But again, all of you sticking to your guns and learning to use that word no.
And there's also a difference, Keith, between a crisis where you step in and help right now, but there's a plan that's moving forward. But it sounds like they've been living on the edge. There's no plan. And now they're just looking at other ways of getting resources to keep this lifestyle in place in a way that's not healthy for them. So I agree with you, Parky. Good advice.
And it's not an uncommon situation across the country today. The numbers may be a little different. The names different, but it's happening all over.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to Robert, who's in Arizona with a question for us. Robert, how you doing?
Yes, I'm here. I'm good. How are you?
Good. What's your question for Parky?
Well, my question is, the situation that we're currently in right now, I'm engaged right now, and we're looking to get married here in the next couple of months, and we both have accumulated some debt, and with that being said, we both have houses, and we are looking to go out and buy a house together or move in one of our homes that we currently have that we've been paying on and have a mortgage on each. And we're thinking that the smarter thing to do with all the debt that we have is to take the proceeds from my house that I've been in for the past 8 years, pay off both of our debts with that, all of our credit card debt, which is combined like $55,000. I'll have enough money to still put $50,000 in the bank for emergency savings plus more, of course, be completely debt-free. And then since her mortgage payment is $1,000 right now that we'll both be on, by applying an extra $500 a month on it, knocking it all the way down to 12 years. I wanted to get your opinion on how that sounds and if that sounds smart or if just taking on the traditional 30-year mortgage would be still appropriate in this case.
Okay. Well, the first thing I would ask is, how old are you all?
I am 37 and she is 44.
Okay. Well, congratulations on the engagement. I look forward to the wedding invitation here soon so I can come out to Arizona and be a part of that.
Well, thank you.
Congratulations. Everything that you said there makes a lot of sense. The only thing that I would caution you on is obviously you don't want to do anything until you get married, all right, and making sure that happens. But that money that you guys have built up in equity in each one of those houses by selling both of those, what you're saying is I'm really going to pay a price by taking a huge chunk of that and paying off all this debt that we've got. Now, $55,000 is a lot of money. But again, in looking at what you're talking about, paying that off, that probably would be something that I would do. But at the same time, I'd also consider what my annual income is between the two of us. How long would it take me to get out of this situation if I just took that equity, both houses, and actually applied that to a new house, put that equity back into this new property, maybe get myself on a 15-year mortgage and pay that off even sooner than the 12 years by being aggressive? The point is, as we begin to pay off that debt, it teaches us. It's kind of like touching that hot stove where mom told us not to touch many years ago. As we do that and we pay that price going through the next several months and maybe even a couple of years paying that off, our tendency to go back into that is significantly reduced because we still feel that pain. If we take just the equity from both these properties and take a huge chunk of that and pay off that debt, that kind of eliminates us touching that burner. We are more apt to go back and get into that situation again. But I think either one of those is significant. You guys have got to talk about that and make sure you're on the right path. The other thing that you mentioned there with your age, both of you will just call you 40 at that particular point. You really want to get in a position where you can pay that house off as quick as you can. This would be something that would help you do that. I would encourage you that 15-year mortgage. Obviously, the interest rate is going to be a little bit lower than the 30-year. But even if you've got a 30-year and say that you're going to pay it on a 15-year plan, the problem is you don't know what life's going to throw at you. If you'll take that 15-year plan, now you are committed to it. And being intentional with that, you can pay that thing off in sooner than 15 years and really begin to build a strong financial life and having everything that you've got paid for, building wealth as you go forward, week to week, paycheck to paycheck.
Very good. Thank you, Robert. Appreciate your call. Quick break. When we come back, here's the question, Parkey. People are thinking, some people are thinking about retirement age and preparing for the future. Do you have any thoughts about how much should a 30-year-old couple have in savings? I mean, what's the kind of a normal savings that a 30-year-old should have thinking about being 65 at some point, or a 40-year-old or a 50-year-old? Just a thought. We'll come back and ask you to, we'll give you about a minute or two to think about that, and we'll come back. Parkey Thompson, today we're talking intentional finances with our intentional finance coach, Parkey Thompson. If you have a question or comment, 888-888-1717.
You're listening to Intentional Living with your host, Dr. Randy Carlson. Intentional Living is furnished by Parent Talk Incorporated and is made possible by the generous support of listeners just like you. This program is not a substitute for professional counseling, medical, financial, or legal advice. Intentional Living is not intended to be therapy by radio. We are Intentional Living, and we'll be right back.
Hey, did you know you're part of the family? Yeah, you. That's why you're listening right now. And here's a way you can really feel the familyness. Join Intentional Living on Facebook at facebook.com/intentionalliving. Just click like and instantly you'll have more than 100,000 other family members, including Dr. Randy, ready to encourage you in your intentional life. You never know. God might use you to encourage someone else. So come on in. That's Intentional Living on Facebook at facebook.com/intentionalliving.
Hi, this is Dr. Kevin Lehman with advice on how you can be an intentional parent. You know, only children are interesting in that, yes, they are young adults at a young age. They tend to do extremely well in life. There's a lot of myths about only children, and that is that they're spoiled, rotten to the core and all that. You know, I haven't found that to be the case at all. Only children do extremely well in life. They're represented in life by many people who have hosted talk shows over the years, astronauts. My friend Dr. James Dobson, only child. Only children do really well. What only children harbor in the deepest part of their heart is, wow, what happens if something happens to mom or dad? That's something that drives the only child. So they tend to be super responsible. They're great people. And by the way, if you have an only child, you might be looking for a youngest daughter or youngest son in the family for them to marry. That would be a delightful birth order combination.
Dr. Kevin Lehman. The only question is only children. What was it about you? You know, okay, I won't go there. Your parents thinking one's enough? I don't know. Talking about only children. Coming up in just 2 weeks, the 21st in Glendale, Hope for Your Home, Marriage and Parenting Conference. Get your tickets. They're going fast. And I think we're going to sell out real soon here. Just go to theintentionallife.com. That's theintentionallife.com. We're talking money today with Parkey Thompson, who's our contributor for finance. He's a certified financial counselor, very compassionate in helping clients that he deals with navigate through the challenges of their financial life. And if you have a comment on all this, you're welcome to join us at 888-888-1717. Press 2 and leave your comments with us. Parkey is on the line. Parkey, did you get a chance to think about that in terms of people thinking who really want to prepare for retirement? We know the numbers are pretty awful when it comes to people saving for the future. But to give people a thought, let's say a 30-year-old who's a couple listening or a 40-year-old couple, is there any rule of thumb of how much they should have set aside?
Well, I don't know if there's a rule of thumb, but I mean, just as a coach, what I would tell you is the more you can do earlier, the better off you're going to be in life. When you think about it, it's a crock pot approach. It is that coffee percolator approach. The longer that stuff can get in there and work, the better off you're going to be. I mean, as you asked that question, I just jotted down some numbers here. Ideally, at about 30, 35 years old, we would like to have about $200,000 to $300,000 in there just in investments. And again, that's a large number, but at the same time, that's a small number when you look at the number of years that you've got to invest, another 20, 25, 30 years to be able to do that. Again, adding to that, as you go about it, you really don't have to put in some things that are of high risk to be able to build the amount that you're really going to need at retirement. It's been said you're probably going to need $2 to $3 to $4 million at retirement to be able to fund your lifestyle, depending on what that lifestyle is. Obviously, you've got a smaller lifestyle, you're going to need a smaller amount of money. At the same time, if you got larger, maybe that $4 million is not enough. But the sooner you can start putting that in there, the better it's going to work. It's called a rule called compound interest. And the sooner people can take advantage of that, the more it's going to work for them. Being intentional, realizing, you know, for me to be able to get that kind of money in there, I've got to really see, hey, do I need the biggest and best house on the block? Do I need a new car every year? Do I have to wear the finest clothes all the time? Taking your money, being intentional with that, and realizing that you want to grow wealth with that over a long period of time, the sooner you can get started, the more you put in there, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah, we got some of our listeners just fell off their chair on the floor thinking about where they are. But I'll tell you, it's a little bit over an extended period of time, preparing for the future. Obviously, we trust the Lord, and we don't teach that retirement is necessarily going to be for every person. In fact, we don't see retirement in the Bible, even though people are going to slow down. Let's be realistic. You're not going to continue to work and be able to have the resources. There'll be times where you're going to have to adjust your lifestyle even later in life. But when you
I tell people all the time that retirement is different for everybody. I feel sorry for the person that retirement is the recliner and the remote control.
That's right.
But it's doing other things that God wants you to do. And he's put you in a position to where he's given you the ability to build wealth. You've done a good job with that. And maybe it's something, you know, you're not even getting a paycheck for, but you're being a help to people sometime down the road. But that money that you've invested, that money that's worked for you, that money that God's blessed, now takes care of the needs that you have.
Mm, very good. Barbara's in New Mexico. She has a question about student loans, I think. Barbara, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
All right. Sounds like you're moving around. Let's see if we can get your question on.
Yes, I was, but I'll go to a single place. Okay. Yes, my question is, I've had this student loan, started it in 1999. I graduated in 2001. I did the accelerated, and I took out, of course, student loans to do this, and I've been deferring. Well, I had been paying on it, and then I lost my job, so I was working temporary, and so then I started deferring it, and then I moved states, and in the state that I'm in, I'm now on SSI. I did go recently to see about another job, but it wasn't a good fit for me. And all my son's growing up time, most of it, was spent working two jobs, not to buy extras, but to pay the rent and, you know, pay for things that, clothes and shoes and those types of things. So I never really developed a savings plan. And I'm living here in a condo that my son owns, and I'm very grateful for that.
How much is the student loan, Barbara?
It's $50,000.
And it's deferred right now? You're not paying on it, or you are? Paying, so
it's deferred.
And so that becomes a big concern. Are you working right now?
No.
So you're not working, and you're living in a condo owned by your son.
Yes.
And so what's your question? Your question, what to do with that loan?
Or, yes.
Okay,
yes.
All right. Okay, Parky, what do you, that sounds like a real challenge, not having to work on a $50,000 student loan.
And on top of that, the Social Security income that you mentioned there as well, Barbara.
Right.
Are you in contact with the student loan people on a regular basis?
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That is good, because the more you talk to them, the more of an opportunity you're going to find that they potentially might be able to help you out with something. The big thing about deferment, it's kind of a misnomer there. Yeah, you're deferring your payments, but it's continuing to grow in interest.
Right.
So while that $50,000, don't know what it was when it was original, obviously you got $50,000 now, but it will continue to grow the longer that you pay on it. I think the communication that I would have with them is to see what they can help you out with now that you are on this SSI. Obviously, you said that you're looking at another job, and maybe that comes to fruition of what you're doing. But right now, you have an opportunity to kind of discuss what those options are. The student loan situation is something that it continues to grow across the country. Barbara, you're very clearly explaining here that you've got to need a situation maybe you hadn't planned on. But there's a lot of people that I meet. There's a lot of people that I see and read about who are just ignoring their student loans. Many states across the country, and I don't think this would apply to you, but to the listeners out there, many states across the country are really starting to crack down on professionals, primarily doctors, physicians, nurses, and so forth, who are ignoring and not paying their student loans when they have the ability to do that. In many cases, they are taking away their professional license to get their attention and get things moving. Student loan situation is a serious thing. In your particular situation with that SSI, that may be a benefit to where you can work something out with them of what's going on. At the same time, realize for people who are not, and I'm assuming the SSI that you've got is because of a disability, but people who are getting older and just draw that Social Security, in many cases, the government's actually withholding an amount of money to take care of those student loans that they haven't paid for as well. Right now, I would encourage you to stay on the phone with them on a very regular basis to see what they can do to help you through this situation.
Thank you, Barbara. We'll be praying for you. You know, we hear the economic news, it's up and down, but it seems to be improving. The market, the stock market has been way up. What are some foolish things that people can be, decisions that people can be making now, where they're maybe feeling a little more encouraged than they were, I don't know, a year or two ago? What are some things people need to be watching out for in this current economic place that we're in?
Well, I think the biggest thing is the euphoria that things are always going to be this good. We know over the last many years that that's just not the case. It's been nice over the last 18 months, 2 years, and it continues to grow, and we want it to be able to do that. What I would tell you is there was a gentleman who ran for the presidency a few years ago, and he explained this to me. He said, Parky, there are three economies in this world. There's the world's economy, there's the U.S. economy, and there's your economy. And the only economy that you have any type of control over is your economy. So what I would tell people is to build a solid financial house at this particular point. Even though things are looking rosy, make sure that you're squared away with an emergency fund. That'll be our first thing that we're doing here, because a lot of people want to get invested in the market so they can take advantage of these things. And quite frankly, because things are going well, they invest when things are high, they sell when things are low. The wrong thing to do. Work on your economy. Have an emergency fund. If you put all that money in the stock market through a 401k, through a Roth or traditional IRA, whatever tool might be available to you, and you don't have an emergency fund and something happens, how do you get that money without taking a penalty and paying a bunch of money in taxes to the U.S. government as you do that? Stay focused on what you should be doing. Build an emergency fund. Get your debt paid off. Really begin to live life like you should. Become intentional with every dollar that you make. That's going to help you whether it's good times or whether it's bad times.
And it begins maybe as simply as saying, we don't know where the money is, taking the next 30 days and just counting every dime that's going out. Where is it going? As I mentioned, if you use a bank, you can have printouts where it shows how the money's being spent if you're using checks and so on. But to start really looking at where the money's going, I think a lot of people, they have the right intention, the good intention. They want to do this, but they don't even know where to begin. As simple as just getting an idea of how much is going out, how much is coming in. And we talk about 10-10-80 here. Tithing, we didn't even talk about tithing, but the importance of tithing, that's an act of worship. It's an act of obedience. It's an act of love for God, but then learning to save at least 10%, maybe more. I think the bottom line is if we can learn to live on 70% or 80% of what comes in over an extended period of time, we're going to be a lot better off, I would think.
And the earlier you do that, the more able you are to live in that lifestyle to be able to do it as well. You mentioned that report that the banks will give you, and the truth is you mentioned checks. For most people today, it's debit cards.
Yeah, exactly.
Those transactions that you look at pile up to be able to do that. I would encourage everybody, just like you said, to write it down, but don't rely on the bank. It's there maybe to help you. But when you write it down, there's power in you writing it down. For you to be able to see those things that you did and feel those numbers that you write down, help you see that, help you to begin to make changes that you need to make.
Very good. Before we wrap it up, Parkey, we've been talking money. And by the way, I appreciate your as being a contributor to the Intentional Living Center and your passion for finance. We've got some people listening today who are feeling pretty overwhelmed. There's been a lot of information. Can you give just a cut? We only got about a minute left, but just a one or two things that people could just in the next couple of days, the next 30 days, that they could do to help them get started.
Well, first of all, and you talk about that being overwhelmed, that's with most people. And quite frankly, the two reasons why people don't seek out the help that they really need is because of embarrassment or pride. And what I would tell you is set that stuff aside. All the mistakes that we all have made, including me, the fact is it's all about stuff. It's material stuff. Step back and let's really begin to focus on what is important. And I really think that we have to ask God to be able to help us, give us a clear mind, provide the wisdom that we need, and help us take the steps that we need to take. We've heard some things on calls today where some people need to take some steps here. The truth is what we've got to do is take care of our own situation. One of the things that you just mentioned, writing everything down that we're spending money on a monthly basis and beginning to weed that stuff out of what we really don't need will free up some cash to be able to help us get on a budget and be able to identify the steps that we need to take. And the first thing that I would encourage people, because this is something that affects everybody, is making sure we have an emergency. None of us are guaranteed that we won't have an emergency. It's going to happen. We just don't know when. We don't know what it's going to cost. But we do know it's going to happen. Be prepared. Start that activity now. As you begin to watch that grow, it'll change your momentum. It'll change the way that you're thinking. You will continue to take the steps in the right direction.
Very good. Parkey, thanks for being with me today. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And all the contribution that Parkey Thompson gives to the ministry. You hear his spot on the Intentional Living Minute and joins us from time to time. Here's the challenge. We've given you a lot of things today. All right? I would encourage you to one thing that resonated in your heart to get started with, to take a step today to start moving in a direction to honor God more and more with the finances that flow through your hands, okay? That's being intentional. Tomorrow, we're going to turn our attention to same-page parenting. We're going to talk about being on the same page as parents. Sounds like a pretty practical thing to do, right? But many parents struggle with it. We're going to help you get there. Thank you all for your support. God bless you. We'll see you next time from Intentional Living.